built this like 8-figure a year business without being very good at anything.
You're listening to the Next Generation Podcast, weekly interviews with the most interesting and successful 20-somethings out there.
On today's show, we have Colin Landfors, CTO for the publicly traded cannabis company Unrivaled Brands. Colin has built a career hustling to some of the biggest names in cannabis and still finds time to work on miscellaneous projects from selling physical goods to even building software. Colin, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. We're super excited to have you on. Now, man, I think when we start off this journey and we start off this episode, like we see you now and like you're leading this publicly traded company. And it's really cool and really inspiring. But I think one of the messages that you preach time and time again is just like builders build. And it's kind of like been like the motto that you've kind of like stuck with over the years. I'd love to kind of kick off this podcast by taking it back to day one and like where everything began, like how you even got started with your entrepreneurial journey.
Yeah. You know, I saw a tweet, I think yesterday, somebody asking what, you know, how you made your first dollar online. And I guess that wasn't my first dollar. My first dollar was besides selling weed, was throwing parties. I think there's a lot of DJs and promoters in the entrepreneurship. And then my first online dollar was selling fake sneakers on eBay that were transparently like not fake. So not like, you see what I'm saying? Like not, we're not ripping people off. They knew that the $70 Jordans were not $150 Jordans because they were $70. So sorry, that is hardly an origin story. That was the very beginnings. I think after college, I spent a lot of time like kind of anxiously trying to figure out what exactly I was going to build. I did like some small media sites, like content sites, trying to figure out how to make that work. I did an SMS SaaS. A lot of these things kind of bleed into like all of a sudden you find yourself doing an agency. It's a bit of a trap just because of the cash flow involved, right? So definitely did that. That molded into more growth consulting, right? Like a pretty different. I went from agency hustle to like actually making good money for myself and helping big brands like Adidas, Red Bull, so on and so forth. And then at some point I kind of got tired of that grind and jumped in with one of my clients and got a gig. And when I left that was when I started doing cannabis. So all of those things I just rattled off somehow ended up being in like regulated and emerging consumer product spaces. Not particularly intentionally, but now when you fast forward 10 years, it's like, yeah, it's drones, guns, FDA regulated, skincare and cosmetics, medical devices and weed. So I'm not sure how we got here. But to your point, Connor, I just love making stuff.
Holy shit. That's a hilarious list to even run down in the first place. I want to quickly go back and touch on one thing that you just mentioned. It seemed like you skimmed over and I think people who fall in this bucket might be confused and want me to dive deeper here, but you said that building an agency is a trap. And I see a lot of people my age, especially as they're kind of getting started off, wanting to go down and build up an agency, because I think you also alluded to this a little bit, like you get really solid cash flow from it, but why do you see it as a trap versus, you know, something that you can use to fund other areas of business?
Yeah, well, there's definitely utility in it. And some agencies can work. Generally speaking, I think that, you know, most of them are time arbitrage. And that's like the lowest, no offense to anybody, but we all know that's the lowest form of business, right? I think it's also a great first step. So it's no knock. I think my favorite part about the current landscape of agency, of the agency world, especially like on Twitter, which I know we're both familiar with, is these dudes that close like a $10,000 a month client and then now they're 6-figure agency owners. That is not different from a job, my friend.
My favorite as well is the high ticket sales or whatever. Yeah. It's like, you mean sales? High ticket sales is like, high ticket sales is like, oh, I just sold a $500,000 a month like client. Like, okay, yeah, let's call that high ticket sales. Like go work at Salesforce for 6 months and you'll know what high ticket sales looks like.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't know. Agency, like necessary evil, I think great stepping stone. They're just also, it can be easy to get caught up in that cash flow. And I like a lot of what I'm seeing now where people are using an agency as a stepping stone. I love the play of building an agency and then building SaaS and behind it. Like that's a hell of a move. Right. So yeah, it's all, look, I don't think anything is bad, like, or any path is bad. I'm a big believer in the journey, and it's just not for me, I guess.
Was it an active decision to kind of shut down or sell the agency and make the transition into cannabis, or did it just kind of happen? You had the opportunity, decided it was a better one than what you're currently working on.
I had a partner and I got fed up with it and walked. And like, I don't really do like sunk loss as much. Like, if I'm done with something, I have no desire to like, you know, eke out, or like, I just walked, you know, you deal with it. And honestly, it was there's a pretty big gap between that and then ending up in weed. Like I said, that was kind of, for me, my evolution there was that started as a SaaS. Very quickly it ended up an agency, right? Because like the customers of the SaaS were happy to pay you more money for agency type work than the SaaS we were doing. Right. And they're, like I said, a trap. But from there is when I just got into like what I kind of refer to as growth consulting, which especially at the time I kind of thought of it as like entrepreneurship for hire. You know, I was at this point like very, very capable, but hadn't found my thing. Like the SaaS and that agency, like it worked fine, but it wasn't going to be a big business. So I was just dropping into other businesses to do what I do anyway on other people's. And we did, like, I did some local service businesses. Like I said, I did some stuff with Adidas, a couple global brands, I think probably highest impact for some medium-sized e-commerce and local service businesses. I love those businesses. They're so easy. And I had fun with that one in particular.
So you mentioned you had a partnership there, and you've tweeted a couple times about like you actually do enjoy working with friends. So I'm curious on the lessons maybe from, I'm assuming you've had partnerships go wrong, partnerships go right. Anything you can take away on when either looking for a co-founder or, you know, someone to partner with on a business?
Yeah, I mean, I think my main thought there, I don't think I followed up to that tweet today on the topic, is that the way you make it work with any partner, even if they are a friend, is you like communicate clearly, and you set expectations with each other, and you speak candidly with one another, and you put people in roles based on their merit, not based on it being the homie, right? And so these are all the same things that make it work with like a partner you met off the street, or an employee you hire for a role, so on and so forth. So, yeah, like, I don't know, in my opinion, if all parties can do those things, and it doesn't work out, it kind of takes a lemon for it to not be okay in the end. That doesn't mean, you know, there's been some gaps in some of the friendships involved in that when they did come to an end, but any that was worthwhile, is fine at the end of the day.
100%. Can you quickly riff on like some of the stuff that you're doing right now? Because I think when we were setting up this call and I was like thinking about like what we're going to kind of dive into, my thought is like, Colin, like, smart marketing dude, likes to hustle and like sells weed. Like these are like the three things that I like kind of like pin you down as, in terms of like your rep. And then you just started mentioning guns, skincare products, and like all of this other stuff. Or do you have like a half a dozen businesses, or are these just like things that you've sold in the past?
Those are just all in the past. Like I said, particularly in that like marketing and marketing consultant phase, like I, the pattern seemed to be consumer product that you can't just do the usual playbook on, right? Like you can't run Google AdWords on guns. Sorry.
Can't sell guns on the internet. Yeah, right.
I mean, you can sell them, but you can't advertise them. Right. And so just like, again, I'm not sure how it materialized, but somehow you end up with this path of like nothing but weird stuff. And the culmination of which, or at least at current, is cannabis, which is the same story, right? We're jumping through hoops to do literally everything we do.
And what, just out of curiosity, like, because when I think of marketing today, I think maybe this is a lazy way of approaching marketing, but like marketing today at the end of the day is like pretty much arbitrage in terms of like attention, right? So you are going and you're bidding on Facebook, you're bidding on Instagram, you're bidding on Google, you are going and running YouTube ads. You are like it's, I think, very digital because I've grown up in such a digital environment. Do you basically, for any of these products, whether it's cannabis, guns, anything that you can't like violate Zuckerberg's terms of service with, do you have to go like really old school marketing where like you find print media and you're like, let's go and advertise in that magazine, or like, let's go and set up a booth at this trade show?
Yeah, absolutely. So firearms, right? Talk about high ticket sales. So we were doing what we coined the smart rifle. It's a $50,000 sniper rifle. They can lock onto targets, track them. It calculates for wind. It calculates for the rotation of the earth, gravity, so on and so forth, right? So you know, one of the big plays there was direct mail to affluent neighborhoods in Texas, right? And realistically, those guys probably weren't like cruising Instagram to begin with. So that worked.
I'm just imagining like going out and like to grab the mail. Like I grew up in Jersey, whatever, right? Like grab the mail. Like I'm walking back, I'm shuffling like car payment, house payment. It's like, oh, fucking like gun payment. Okay. Like
smart rifle.
Yeah. It's like, papa, yeah. we got a gun mail, direct mail.
Yeah. We sold some chrome plated ones to Saudi princes. I'm not sure if I should say that, but it's been a while.
That's
now.
Amazing. So. I'm assuming you would probably do a whole podcast episode on how you market things that don't have, you know, standardized marketing channels. You have a phenomenal story though, too, behind Unrivaled Brands. Would love to maybe kind of start there with you transitioned from all of these other projects. I think you had a buddy that was kind of doing a little bit of sales to dispensaries, and you just decided that, hey, this is what I'm going to go all in on, or this is, you know, I'm gonna test this out for a little bit, and then it just became successful. But you had a lot of kind of up and downs there. Can we maybe kind of start with the beginning of that story?
The company I was at the time was shifting to enterprise, which means like, you know, our work there was done as the consumer product guys. And so I had a nice little severance runway. And again, that was like through my career, like that was the only job I had. I was not used to just like getting the paycheck and not really worrying about it. So I'm sitting there like, what's next? And a handful of guys, three guys I grew up with were flipping packs to dispensaries, right? Catching up with them. And it's like, yeah, we're doing 100 a month. You know, we're doing 150 a month. And I had, like I said, I had this runway where I don't need a paycheck for 2 months. Let's see what this is all about. And I mean, as the story goes, the rest is history. That was truly just flipping packs early on. Several of us were like, you know, brand and product background. And so it was all just building a channel for the inevitable product that would come without particularly knowing what that was. And then I think probably a year into it, it was time to do products. And, you know, to simplify, we've done, you know, two rounds of M&A, really, I guess three rounds of M&A, depending on how you look at it. The second one was a merger into a public company in July. Which was then very quickly followed by acquisition of one of the OG delivery services in Sacramento, and then Peoples, which is like the crown jewel of California, of Southern California dispensaries, and some other dispensaries under the Peoples brand, that one of which is open downtown LA and a couple which are not yet. Yeah, selling weed.
And sorry, just you got to explain this to me, because I'm definitely going to sound dumb even asking everybody. You say flipping packs. Is that like PAX, the product company? Like PAX?
Sorry, no.
Are you saying like packs of weed?
Yeah, weed. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Because I'm thinking like, okay, are they buying and reselling packs at like wholesale prices or whatever like that? But like, I mean, that's what I was getting.
I think PAX is definitely a product on the market. But yeah, no, I mean, so, and what I really mean is just selling bulk flower, right? Like not CPGs, just buying 100 pounds, breaking it up and selling it a pound at a time to dispensaries.
And I'm so interested too, from like a commercial side of that, like the, I don't know, I guess maybe I'm just going to ask a really like high level question here, but like regulatory wise, even getting started, that seems like a nightmare. Like staying compliant once you have gotten started seems like a nightmare. Like were you guys able to do this? You hear these startup stories out of like my mom's base, my mom's garage, whatever like that. Like, were you guys in like a really legitimate facility from day one and you had to put up the capital for that kind of stuff? Or were you guys like kind of getting by with like not having to go through all the hoops?
Yeah, it started in medical. So it was a house and then the oil room of a mechanic, of an old mechanic shop, 800 square foot garage. And then we got the initial rec licenses in that garage. And then, you know, out of there went and do an 8,000 square foot warehouse. The licensing and all that fun stuff, it like varies so much by state. So, in the early days, like our core our core function, our function in terms of the regulators moving product, right? So the license type is the simplest one to get. It was a wholesale license. And it's like basically like you pay the license fee and have a pretty robust security system and you're in business. If you're doing like hydrocarbon processing, you have to have like, you know, blast proof rooms and fire inspections and all this stuff. And to this day, we don't have any operations like that. We have cultivation, we have retail, we have all these things, but no like super serious, like super critical extraction, anything of that nature that requires much more rowdy permitting, et cetera.
From a financial side, I know in the beginning working with banks was extremely tough. Even I think just getting like checking accounts or any sort of cannabis related banking infrastructure. What was that? I guess, how did that transition from, I'm assuming there's a big difference between the first type of banking relationship you had compared to now
being public? Yeah, also like very state by state. And it hasn't really changed in the last like 3 years, honestly. It's super archaic. It's really clunky. But when all is said and done, we get to have bank accounts. We don't get to have like lines of credit, you know, or all these things that are typically tools for businesses. But what you basically have is, and I don't know my way around banking regulation. I probably wouldn't be a very interesting person if I did, but credit unions are operating on a slightly different wavelength. So basically what you have is you have credit unions that said, cool, we're going to do a marijuana program. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what goes into that for them, but you have this really, so like our core states are Oregon and California, and there are credit unions in both states that do this. So you can send wire transfers, you can do ACH, you know, you can run payroll. But leading up to that, those banks, you know, there's certainly been plenty of account closures that have to get dealt with. And like I said, leading up to that, that came available, you know, in my early days, once we were recreational. So in the medical days, you know, we probably have 4 accounts in like a 12, 18 month period. I'm like blackballed at B of A or US Bank. I can't remember which one. And like kind of all the usual, all the things you might imagine. It's like a huge luxury.
That's hilarious. I just looked this up, and so you might know more accurate numbers than I do from a quick Google search, but this quick Google search is telling me that the US alcohol market is around $225 billion. And it's telling me that the US legal recreational cannabis market is roughly like $25 billion. Is that safe to say, like, it's about like 10 times bigger?
I don't know the alcohol numbers. I tweeted about this a while ago. There's a Prohibition Partners report on, I think that in 2021, it was something like $34 billion in legal cannabis.
Okay. But so roughly, just like to use somewhat round numbers, like a 10-to-1 difference, right? In terms of like size and scale, I would think.
Yeah. Alcohol, booze has to be bigger than that.
That's what I thought too, but like these are like 5 different sites. The other one I'm seeing says that the international one is 1.4 trillion in 2017. So I don't know. I thought it was way bigger too. But either way, where are my questions heading? And then I have a second one after this is, do you think in our lifetime, cannabis is one of those kind of things that's like going to catch up to alcohol sales? Or do you think that they're just like totally different things and like they shouldn't be compared as similar markets?
I think they're totally different things. I understand the comps. I totally get it. They fall apart pretty quickly. I think the most interesting one is wine with terroirs, or however you say it, and just the agriculture element, the environmental element, right? Because so much of what's going on, if you have flower in your hand with the nose and how it tastes and all these things are so environmental. Whether it's grown inside where there's perfect control, but there's still decisions being made about like, okay, if we flush it, then we're going to have these tastes. If we leave it in, then that's going to bring our THC up, but we're going to lose a little bit of terp. So there's going to blah, 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 like, right. All these kind of things. There's a lot of parallels there. Overall, I hate the booze parallel, right? Cause alcohol is like, I drink some beers. Alcohol is poison. Like, let's not get it twisted. Right. Cannabis is like, I'm also like not a pothead. Cannabis is absolutely incredible and a gift to humanity. And I think we're like generally barely scratching the surface on its entry into like just like lifestyle and wellness and where it will be 10 years from. We're not even close. Like first inning at best.
Spoken like someone who runs a public cannabis company. Yep. No, I'm fucking with you, but, know. But of course, man. No, but I guess, are there, and this actually isn't my second question, but I wanted to take what you just said a little bit further too. Like, are there ways, when I think about smoking weed, it's just like literally sitting on the couch and we smoke. Like, if you go out, I'm just kind of like hanging out in like the corner of a bar or something like that. Right. But basically just like hanging up on myself, just looking at my phone. But are there ways, like when you say like we're not even scratching, like are there ways that people are consuming it now in like a very niche group that you're like, oh no, that's probably gonna be more the future. Like people go like wine tastings and stuff like that and like try different things on their palate or whatever. Yeah. I don't even know. Like, do you think that's gonna be
so
different?
I probably have, so I can make that first statement of like, the cannabis hasn't even come close to like entering pop culture and like mm-hmm. culture in general. And like in the future, yeah, I see like tons of low dose happening. I'm not going to totally nerd out here and go down the cannabinoid rabbit hole, but like we haven't even scratched the surface of cannabinoids in general, what they are and what they can do for us. So that's why I say like first inning, right. Not even close. On the other side of that is like far and away, like the biggest myth amongst, you know, I think, popular cannabis media and really like suits, which I pretend to be sometime, is that it's anybody but potheads that are driving consumer sales, right? It's like this whole low dose are like, yeah, this brand is for like the soccer moms that want to be discreet about their consumption, yada, yada, yada. It's like, no guys, potheads buy the weed. You don't have to trick them into thinking that they're going to like it. They smoke every single day, right? Like that when they go to the store, they don't buy one vape cartridge for $20 and they're not going to come back for 3 months because that's how long it's going to take them, right? They're there every day. They're there twice a week. That is the cannabis consumer. And from a like dollar share standpoint, that is 90% of the market, right? The whole hypothetical, you see all these brands that are like, you know, light and fluffy and airy, and they're marketed towards like, you know, making cannabis normal and like these new hypothetical consumers that from like a data standpoint don't actually hardly exist. They do exist, but like hardly.
Will they exist? Is that going to be the direction it goes into?
I think so. But to bring it back to that alcohol comparison that I already told you I didn't like. So here we are. We've got wine spritzers, right? It's 2022. We got White Claws and seltzers. It only took 120 years or something, right? And so we're not at all in the like moonshine phase, but we're not even close to White Claw. And I think that's one place where it's like, it is helpful to make a comparison like that. We're not even close.
That's super smart. I do even remember in the beginning of college, like in the very beginning of college, at least for us, White Claw didn't even come out. And then it came out like sophomore or junior year. And it was very much touted as like a feminine drink. Now to like say that like a seltzer is like a feminine drink, like seems almost weird, right? Like, yeah, the narrative totally changes. Getting real quick into that second question though, like we're kind of talking about like we're the first inning right now. There's going to be a lot of tailwinds, like driving this industry, especially as adoption picks up. And one of the things that I think about a lot, especially like in e-commerce, is the whole analogy of like selling pickaxes to miners kind of thing, right? I think the very obvious way to go and capture this is to do exactly what you're doing and sell weed, right? That's like the most apparent thing. What are some of the opportunities that somebody who's listening to this right now that's like, listen, I love the concept. I just can't tell my mom that I sell weed, but I'm super down to go and sell other things like accessory products that can go and positively reinforce this industry. And like the first example that comes to mind for me is like kind of what you said about like more flexible payment processors and like banks for some of these types of companies. Are there other ones that you have in mind that you think could be interesting?
Yeah. So I wouldn't recommend like getting into the cannabis space to my worst enemy. It's brutally difficult. It's hyper competitive. It's all of these things. But to your point, like I think there's a ton of great businesses to be built around the cannabis space that generally should have like a similar growth curve with adoption. So, you know, maybe it's accessories, but I think it's also things like it's any business niche down into cannabis, right? Like, you could be a contractor in your town, or you could be the contractor that specializes in cannabis. Therefore, if I'm building a grow, I don't need to go educate my contractor about, you know, what regulation says and da, 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 and how the security install is going to be. I can go hire a contractor that can build with that in mind. So I love, especially service businesses niche down into cannabis, I think is an excellent space. And that is everybody. As you can imagine, I get a ton of DMs. They're like, how do I like do cannabis? And I send them, I did a thread like kind of in this vein like a year ago, and I send everybody there because like that is tenfold easier. There's no licensing. You can generally get banking unless you've got some weird teller that wants to ruin your day. Like I said, it's a similar opportunity if you're doing it in a market where it's prolific and legal.
Cool. I think we'll make sure to link that down below. I'm assuming people are probably going to want to go read that as well. In terms of your comments on how competitive it is, how difficult the business is, I'm assuming also revolves around, I believe it's a pretty low margin as well, right?
Yeah. So all these things vary by state, right? So you go to Florida, where there's one company who I shall not name that owns half the dispensaries. Right. So maybe that's not so competitive and the margins are pretty good. Right. I would imagine that works out. And what I'm talking about is the West Coast. Right. So I put all these, there are limited license states. Right. These are all, I would think about them as JV. Right. And then you come to the West Coast, which are generally open license. That doesn't mean it's just a free for all quite. Right. Like the states are like put moratoriums, like we're not issuing more because there's too many, this kind of thing. But like generally, if you want to do it, you can get a license and do it. Right. Which is like, I think generally how open markets work, for better or for worse, because it's been a bloodbath. But the West Coast is the league. If limited license states are JV ball, and that comes with everything, right? It's one thing to be a good 3-point shooter in high school, and it's another thing to knock down an NBA three over LeBron. And I think that is the moral of the story, right? We have shelving. We have like crazy. We have entire businesses that are backed by money that don't need to be profitable. Like they don't care about that. Right. So just totally different ball game depending on the markets. But when I talk about how competitive, I'm talking about the West Coast and particularly California. Like, you also have Oklahoma. Oklahoma is like also really over licensed. So it's wildly competitive. California, I don't know what it is, you know, today, like fifth, sixth largest economy in the world. There's plenty of people that want more licenses. There's generally enough, especially on the supply side. And it's brutally competitive.
Does being vertically integrated allow you to compete against companies that have too much money? Or how do you think you kind of manage some of these difficulties?
I think especially in markets where, you know, supply is abundant. The advantage of being vertically integrated is control, right? So, you know, a lot of these things are, the flower that goes into a brand is not, we're not buying corn, right? Where there's like, here's your tolerance band for these specs. And then you put it in your product and look, you got corn tortillas, right? That is not what we're doing. The input is very, very different on a lot of the SKUs. On some it's not. And so the advantage of being vertical is being able to control that from top to bottom, and control your supply chain, in that way.
I also have kind of a side question as well. I've heard some really interesting strategies that people have done on the real estate side to kind of capture, I guess, some of the licensing discrepancies, whether that's, you know, getting an industrial building license to, I think it was make concentrate or grow or anything. Have you guys explored any kind of opportunities on the hard asset real estate side that isn't, you know, necessarily running a dispensary?
We own some of our real estate. I'm not like intimately familiar with it. I know you guys are dabbling in real estate, so you probably know 10 times more than I do about it. I don't really know enough to speak to it.
That's fair.
Yeah, that makes sense. Two questions now, kind of like on what would you do and what are you going to do for the next couple of years? So let's say the first one is you're back 22 and looking to go and start building stuff and getting scrappy, and you don't necessarily want to just go down directly the selling fake Nikes on eBay rabbit hole. Like you want to build a business. What's getting you excited right now that you would want to go and really work on? And the second question of that is, what do you really just want to work on for the next like 10 years, right? And when I say that, I mean like you know, you mentioned that we're inning one right now in this cannabis game. Are you trying to go and see it out through like the ninth inning? Or do you think like you're gonna run your course, like build up a big brand and stuff like that, and then maybe go and start some other things down the line?
You know, I think I'm sure you guys can relate to this. I'm of the school that the most talent flows to sexy industries, and that makes them not the easiest. And you know, working in cool stuff like everything I've worked in, including weed, is cool. But there's a lot easier ways to kick off cash and build wealth. So for me, I don't know when I will move to the next chapter, but there's no way I'm doing cannabis next, to be totally honest. I think the only asterisk on that is like, I'm working a bunch of on our deliveries right now, which at the end of the day, in a lot of ways is e-commerce. And you know, there could be something there, but in general, I honestly, like, I love boring service-based businesses. I don't dabble there at all, but like I mentioned before, I've done some of that in my past, and, I love all those plays a lot. And then I'm super interested in SaaS. You know, I spent a lot of time building internal tools that are basically like internal functioning SaaS. And I think that that's probably a direction I would head both because of the multiples, but also because the cash flow they can kick off. A bootstrap SaaS is like as good as it gets. And I think a lot of people doing SaaS like go the VC route because it's hot, and it's a terrible move for most. And I just like bootstrap SaaS can kick off cash like nothing we have ever seen before.
95% gross margins isn't too bad for cash. Yeah, flow.
Literally no cost of goods. Are you kidding me?
You probably have one of the most unique, I think, entrepreneurship journeys, at least from like, I don't know, the battles you must have faced and the roadblocks and regulation and banks, and then combining that with being a public company now. How does that impact your either lifestyle or the way you operate? I know you made a couple comments on Twitter about like ADD in terms of focus. Like how do you kind of wrap all that up together to actually remain focused and tackling the problem ahead of you rather than a million other things that are definitely coming up?
I mean, to be honest, I think focus is a little bit of a scam. I spent when I jumped into this business, I had my moment of like, okay, I'm finally going to focus on something. I did not get outsized results out of it. That's probably because cannabis is really difficult. But more importantly, like I was miserable. That's not how I'm wired. And for me, this whole, you know, you mentioned it when we first started talking, the builders build mantra is like pretty new to me. And it's the result of, I'm not sure if you guys can relate to being jack of all trades, but that's my whole shtick. Right. And I think for me, at least early on, there's a lot of like insecurity in the fact that like, I'm not really actually good at anything, or great, I guess maybe is the better way to think about it. Right. And I had a very like introspective moment of like, okay, here we are. I've built this like pretty, you know, eight figure year business, without being very good at anything. What do I actually want to spend my time doing? Like this is in the middle of our first roll up, and I just had, what do I like doing? I just like building shit. Cool. Let's just lean into that. Right. And that's all the, motivation or fire or inspiration I need to like keep trucking. And obviously it's, you know, 60, 65 hours a week are on unrivaled. But it's not, you don't have to like convince yourself not to watch Netflix at night if like your version of watching Netflix is like tinkering on a little SaaS website thing or whatever it may be, right? Like all I do is build shit and hang out with my daughter and my wife, and that's all I need to do.
Damn, I feel like that's gonna resonate a shit ton with other people, because Gio just messaged me on the side, is like, that's a really good line that applies to me. So I feel like, yeah, the funny part is like, I thought of this like a year ago too. I was like, I feel like I don't really have hobbies. Normal people seem to have hobbies. And yeah. Then I was chatting with someone about this, and she's like, Connor, your hobbies are just like starting businesses. And yeah. I was just like, oh
yeah.
I guess when you say it like that, like it sounds really weird to like 99% of the population, but then like there's this subset of people on Twitter who I'm like, oh, that's their hobby too. That makes total sense.
Yeah. It's easy to, I think it kind of gets written off as like hustle porny. And it's like, if you don't like making stuff, then then don't make, you know, that's fine. Like, this is what I like, you know? And for me, it like, it has a wide, I literally, like as a kid, I love making, like building Legos. Like now, if my wife thinks of like some project around the house she wants me to do that is like making something where there didn't used to be anything, like she's probably not going to get me away from it all weekend. Right. Cause I like building shit. And obviously the core output of that is projects and business stuff, but it's applicable to everything for me.
I think that's probably our biggest competitive advantage from everyone that like genuinely enjoys doing this stuff. I think you'd have such a really difficult time to try and come in and compete or really stay motivated if you weren't someone that enjoyed building, right? If you've never spent a weekend trying to throw together some random ass company or build some random project
or buy a domain and like make a website that you right, never do like, anything with, like yeah,
Connor will sneakily go yeah. unrenew half the domains I keep buying.
That's what I did. I started not putting them on auto renew, so that if it was not a thing a year later, then it probably wasn't ever going to be a thing.
I'm like the worst CFO of all time. But when we've owned coldbrew.coffee for 4 years straight and never built anything on it.
No, like, you mean carbonated.coffee and then it didn't renew. And
Sorry. Actually, I think I would have kept coldbrew.coffee. Carbonated.coffee was significantly worse. That's a genius idea.
Some people definitely like carbonated cold brew.
Seltzer and cold brew. Yeah.
Yeah. But I was going to say the one quick thing to kind of wrap it up with as well is you mentioned like it does seem a little hustle porny. And I agree. However, I think it only seems hustle porny. This is a weird way to like add like a Y at the end of that word.
Yeah, that's my bad.
Yeah. When you can't empathize that it's not for everyone. Like if you're the kind of person who's like, hey, listen, this just works really well for me. Like if it's not for you, cool, do your thing. Right. Like I think that's totally fine. And I think there's nothing wrong with it. I think people take fault in it when you have, and like, don't get me wrong, I'm like Gary Vaynerchuk's biggest fan. So like, whatever, but like when you only see a 30-second clip of him yelling into the camera being like, you got to stop watching Netflix and you have to start doing this, like what he's really saying is like, if you want to achieve this, you have to stop doing that and start doing that. He's not saying everyone should go and like stop watching Netflix and start a business, but I think that he gets a really bad rap for that kind of stuff. And I think if you're honestly just like say like, hey, like this is what I really enjoy, if it's not what you enjoy, don't do it.
Yep, I agree. I mean, it's cliche, but it's not work if you like what you're doing. Right. And we all have stuff that we do that is work, but if you're doing it all day and night, it's probably not all like that.
Completely agree.
Colin, where can people find you online to follow along, read some of these awesome threads you've been posting? I'm assuming Twitter, and where else?
Yeah, Twitter. That's about it, as good as it gets right now. It's land force, like Air Force, but land. And Twitter's my focus. I'm gonna start doing some other stuff, I hope, if I can find the bandwidth for it, but land force.
Sweet. All right. We'll link to everything in the show notes. Thanks for coming on again, Colin.
Thanks, guys.
If you thought today's episode was awesome, we would love it if you would leave a 5-star review on the podcast, either on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It makes a huge difference and lets us get cooler and cooler guests for future episodes.